BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of BDNG Meets Podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Education and Development Lead for the BDNG and also Nurse Consultant. So today I have great pleasure in introducing Dr. Andrew Burney, who you may know, many of you, as he is a well-known face around our conferences. He's a consultant dermatologist and also a dermatology surgeon as well. And he's also founder of Altruist Sun Cream. So welcome to today's podcast, Andrew. And could you briefly just tell us about yourself and maybe a wee bit of background into creating and developing your Altruist products?
Sure. Well, thanks very much for having me, Tina. And yeah, I feel like a long association with the BDNG. My colleagues in Canterbury have been members. I've spoken at the meeting. I've attended there. In fact, I think the BDNG meeting was one of the very first places that I actually launched Altruist 10 years ago. It was almost 10 years ago to the day that we were in, I think, Harrogate doing that. I've got a fond memories and associations. As you said, I'm a consultant dermatologist. I'm in Canterbury and I'm the chair of the skin cancer MDT, both locally and regionally of the our cancer network. And as a consequence, see a huge amount of skin cancer and the sort of the consequences of it. And I've been doing this role as the cancer lead for many years, longer than I've been doing Altruist. And it was 15 years ago now, I was in South Africa on a sabbatical, and I was trying to set up a skin cancer unit in Durban and sort of help train the local dermatologists how to do skin surgery better. And whilst I was there, I was introduced to another chap called David, who was working in sales and marketing for a company called Beiersdorf. And we both were Northern Europeans and decided that we wanted to learn to surf. So actually, we became surfing buddies. The water in Durban is nice and warm. It's a great way to sort of keep fit. And yeah, we spend a lot of time sitting on what we call the back line, so behind where the waves break, getting to know each other and trying to surf. But we probably spent more time under the waves than we did on top of them. But either way, a good friendship was made. And we would, you know, chatted about what each other did. He was sort of saying sales and marketing for a company that made sunscreen. And I was working in the industry where we would recommend it. Though actually back then, we dermatologists didn't know all that much about sunscreen compared to now. Yeah. Then probably around about 3 years after I left, he had eventually moved back to Europe, and we met up local to where I live. His family came over and we spent the weekend together. We were just talking about, you know, what I did, again, the increasing rates of cancer, not enough doctors to treat it. And we're then talking about prevention. And he said, well, you do know why sunscreen costs as much as it does. And I was like, well, not really. And he said, well, the actual, you know, let's just assume a £10 product and maybe £2 of that will be the actual product and packaging. And the rest of it is going to be a combination of marketing, profit margins, various different people along the chain. And then, of course, there's VAT as well. So, you know, a significant proportion of it is additional costs. And what if we could combine my contacts, knowledge and experience with his contacts, knowledge and experience? Maybe we could produce a sunscreen that would, you know, be good, people would trust, but yet we could sell at a low price.
Wow, that is quite a story, and congratulations on the 10 years. I can't believe it's 10 years already. That's unbelievable how quick that's gone. And yeah, thank you very much there for mentioning the BDNG. We've been fully behind you and supported you all the way. And you've branched out so much now, which is so positive. I love the story of the surfing. That's fantastic, and how it all came about. And also just explaining, this is a brand new venture it would have been for yourself. You trained as a doctor and you are a consultant. So a very, very brand new venture for you, basically. And like you say, the costings, the business, all behind it. It's very, very tricky, isn't it? Has it been an eventful journey for you?
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, it's no. I had no business experience. My parents were teachers, so I didn't grow up in a business environment at home either. And I wouldn't describe myself as being like a natural entrepreneur. I mean, I'm probably slightly more risk averse than like certainly back then. I was definitely more risk averse. David is a natural entrepreneur and has the business backing and experience. So it was, yeah, I was unsure whether it was a good idea. I mean, we probably would have stood to lose about £20,000 if we had have when we first started and getting going. And now I know how many, what the sort of figures we talk about in with the business now. It's a fraction of it, but equally, it sounded like a lot of money back then. But what I did was, we were like, would it work? Would it not? Would dermatologists recommend it? So actually, after we'd had our conversation about a month later, I was at the annual BAD consultants course, and I did sort of very unscientific sort of investigation, asking my colleagues if I was able to produce a sunscreen that was very cheap, like this much, would you recommend it to your patients? And probably about a third of the people said, absolutely, what a great idea. A third of the people said, I'd probably just tell them to go to Tesco's anyway. And a third of the people went, you won't be able to do it. So David, ever the optimist, went, well, even if only a third of dermatologists recommend it, that's still a reasonable number. And look, we can start small, see how it goes. And so we launched, our first product was an SPF 30 cream. I insisted at the beginning that it would be 5-star protection, and in a 200 mils. And it was finding the formulation scientist was actually relatively easy. It was very strange, literally. It was one of those things that's almost meant to be. Every time we pushed on a door, it opened, it seemed. And so where we I spoke to the formulation scientist. We decided on a 30 rather than a 50 because we thought that probably had a greater universal appeal at the time. I mean, I wonder if that's changed now. Probably more people go to 50, I think.
50,
but
yeah.
but at the time, 30 seemed like the right one to go for. And I was my specifications, if you like, were that it should feel like a moisturizer, be fragrance free, not make you look white. It should be low risk of allergy, and have very good broad spectrum protection. And you put in all of those sort of things together, it must then also be very affordable. And so we managed to come up with a formula that I liked and was affordable. And we sort of designed the packaging. And again, I came up with the name because actually all of the sort of the names that involved sun and skin had pretty much all been trademarked already. So I actually thought, well, what are we trying to do with this product? And so I came up with the name of Altruist, which wasn't trademarked. And so we went with it, and I've had great feedback from the name. I think it sums up the ethos behind what we're doing as well very nicely. And we designed the packaging. And again, I wanted this to be something that didn't look like you were going to go to the beach. I wanted it to be something that looked like something that could be used every day, and also by men, not just women and children, because I think men are the ones that often don't use sunscreen.
Very true.
And Yeah, we had our product, and it was like, well, here it is. But actually, and David's background working for a big multinational was that actually getting it on the shelf was the easiest bit, because you'd come in with the bite of this big company going, okay, hello, Mr. Buyer, hello, Mrs. Buyer, this is our new product. And they go, great, give us loads of money, we'll put it on the shelves. And they're, whereas we were going into the retailer saying, hi, this is our new product. The great thing for you is this is a dermatologist specification product. Dermatologist is going to be recommending it, so you're going to increase footfall into your store. It's going to be a win-win for everybody. They're like, fantastic. How much does it cost? And we're like, ah, right. So we're doing this because we want to reduce skin cancer and keep the cost low. And so consequently, the margins we're asking you to take are really small. And so all the retailers are like, I'm sorry, we've got this shelf space here, and we need to make this much profit. I'm sorry, we can't do it. And also that obviously we have no track record of sales, and they're like, we're a business. We need to make money. We're sorry, we can't support charity like this. Then thankfully, via I think it was like a family contact of David's, they knew somebody who was like very, very high up at Amazon in Europe. They spoke to him, and David spoke to this guy, and he was like, I love this idea. I think it'd be perfect for Altruist, sorry, for Amazon. And he then said, you need to speak to this guy. And so we did. And we gradually worked our way down the food chain in Europe, then to the UK, till we were introduced to the head of beauty for Amazon. And this was a very new area for Amazon. They were sort of starting out, branching out into the sort of the beauty side of things. And for them, it was wonderful because it would increase traffic to their site. And the guy that we were speaking to had actually just come back from Australia and had seen how people use sunscreen there. He was like, I love it. It's a really good idea. Why don't you do a 1 liter? Because that's what they have in Australia. As well, like, good idea, let's do it. They gave us favorable terms, and they gave us sort of access to what they call the Vine program. So if you've got a new product, it helps immediately to get 50 reviews within the space of a month or so. So people use reviews on Amazon a lot. And so it was really helpful to get it on. And yeah, they were really positive. We had a few meetings at Amazon HQ in London, and yeah, David came out of those meetings. I've never had a meeting with a buyer like that before. You know, they were actually encouraging and supportive and interested. And this is incredible. You know, really, really, really amazing. So yeah, we got onto Amazon, and I know they don't necessarily have a great reputation as a big corporate and all this sort of thing. But actually, you know, they enabled us to have, you know, international even straight away, but certainly UK wide distribution immediately. So that was it. You know, we were on. And so I started out with, you know, going to meetings like the BDNG and telling people about it. And I would, whenever I went, I had like a little satchel bag with a few samples in, going, here, try this, try this. This is what I'm trying to do. And gradually it built up, and the dermatological community have been extremely supportive, and with through word of mouth, it's been growing. And then probably, I think it was July of that forthcoming summer, we again, just through luck really, but through one of my neighbors who worked in PR but nothing to do with beauty, like in the building industry, sort of was chatting to a reporter, a business reporter, and she really liked the story. So we ended up with a full page article in the Times in the business section, and literally the next day we sold out, which was amazing. That was like the start. And then the following year, you know, people were like, oh, we really like this. This is really good. You need to do a factor 50. We need to have one that can go in hand luggage. So we did the 100 mil SPF 50, and that was the sort of next step. And again, did well. And that's remains our best seller, actually. It's still the sort of the what you might call our core product, which is what we really want people to use.
That's a fascinating journey, and wow, it's like a roller coaster ride, isn't it? Just, you know, the sort of ups and downs, and you have to Definitely, we have to congratulate you on just the perseverance and how, all these the meetings and the products. And I really like the fact, and this is so important as a nurse, that you took into mind what people think. You don't want that white feeling. You want to look at like a nice product, that you can take in your handbag, and it's more like a classy sort of moisturizer as well. Because I think working as a nurse as well, we get asked all the time about skincare now, especially when we're running sort of the eyes and tretinoin clinics. And it's one of these questions that children, adolescents, adults will come in and basically have all these products maybe, and then they want advice on the products that we can recommend. So it's really important, I think, as a clinician to say, this has been founded by a consultant dermatology, and that's often what I say. We have a trolley with all our little samples on, including yourself and other brands as well. But we can talk about the product, and I use it as well. My children use it. So I think it's just having that reassurance behind the product. It works well, but also it's a lot of thought behind it, so I have to congratulate you on that, definitely.
Thank you.
I know it's amazing, and I do remember at the very beginning when the little samples, definitely, which has definitely grown now. So again, to be commended. So I'm talking about some of the challenges we face, and definitely in the nursing profession. A lot of adolescents, a lot of adults these days have access to social media. They come in with the questions, they're very knowledgeable. Though credit for, I think, the younger generation, they are using SPF a lot more, which is fantastic. But what do you see the challenges with using sunscreen daily is? Because that is what we're recommending, but obviously there's challenges out there with the application of sun cream daily, and there's new information coming out on social media as well. So how does that fit? How can we advise our patients on the use of sunscreen?
Well, I mean, to start with, I mean, the first, there's sort of two aspects to what you asked there, really. The first is like, how do you get people to use it daily? And I think a big part of that is getting people into the habit of just using it. And generally, my recommendation for people is to wear sunscreen on the face from March till October. And obviously, there are nuances if you're an outdoor worker or a sports person or, a builder, maybe that's going to be different. But for the average person, March till October on your face, every day. And by face, I mean the entire face, neck, ears. I say just get into the habit of doing it. So do it after brushing your teeth or after shaving or whatever it is that you do, just put it on. And the reason for doing that is not that actually you're going to get that much sun in like late September and mid-March, if you're working in an office, but actually the harm of putting it on is minimal. It's a small amount you're putting on. And secondly, the benefits are you will be reducing the cumulative burden of ultraviolet, which will be good from a reduction of actinic keratoses, keeping you look young, and all those sorts of things. But also, there is that time when, for example, someone says, "Oh, let's go for a walk at lunchtime," and you haven't been prepared for it, and the sun's out. And actually, if you're out for a 20-minute walk in the middle of the day and it happens to be quite bright, you could get burnt. So it's those times when it's cloudy in the morning, you head out to the shops, you didn't think, "Oh, well, let's put some sun cream on," and then actually you spend all day wandering around, you'll get burnt. The sun comes out, you get burnt. And actually, burning episodes are obviously the most important thing to avoid, but actually, I think that people also don't really appreciate the cumulative burden of ultraviolet sort of being an issue as well. And I guess those people who are doing skin cancer clinics will see those scaly old people who have just got loads of damage from years of just gradual building up of that ultraviolet. So that's the advice that I give. But then, of course, your other part of it, what do you see as the challenges? And you've sort of really sort of touched on a real challenge that we as dermatologists, dermatology nurses, and I would say the sunscreen industry face now. And that is one of trust, because since COVID, since people like Donald Trump are sort of talking about what he's talking about, speaking with great authority on stuff that they don't really know, is what you might call that post-truth era that we're in. And you have people on social media speaking with great confidence about how something is harmful, be it vaccinations, be it big pharma manipulating the world to just their will, to Bill Gates doing stuff for his own benefit. And it's just like all of these sorts of things. If and the problem is, if you start watching these things on social media, the algorithms learn that you watch them, and they'll just keep feeding you with this information. And actually, within that sphere, there's a big group of people who are very anti-sunscreen, and it feeds into that same whole collection of fears of people. And there are two aspects to it. Probably the one that is the most, well, there's, I mean, there's two. It depends on your what your fears are, and your phone is very clever at working out what your fears are.
Very much, yeah, too clever.
So there's the two sides, really. You've got the sort of the harm to human health, and then harm to the environment. So the harm to human health, you'll have people saying, "Oh, it's an endocrine disruptor." You'll even have people saying that the use of sunscreen causes cancer and increases cancer. So some will say it causes skin cancer, and other people will say it causes other forms of cancer, with and there is really no evidence for that. Our job as people working in the field of dermatology is to say with confidence and reassurance that it is safe. But the difficulty there is that we are scientists at the heart. And so a true scientist understands that we don't know everything. And you never give a 100% confident answer. You can always say all the evidence points to the fact that the use of sunscreen in the concentrations that are for it's formulated in, it uses ingredients that have undergone extensive testing by European Union safety bodies and have been declared to be safe. There's lots of epidemiological evidence that suggests that the use of sunscreen is not harmful, but we do know that ultraviolet light is harmful, both long term and with burning episodes. And there is some evidence to suggest that the use of sunscreen reduces the incidence of skin cancer. So, having taken all of this into consideration, our recommendation would be to use sunscreen. Now, of course, you then get home and come back to you go, but you're 100% certain. Can you guarantee that there is nothing harmful in this product? Well, if you look at the ingredients, of course, some of those ingredients, if you had them in high enough concentration, would do harm. But that's the case with anything that you take. Paracetamol, which of course has been in the news recently, and nothing to do with it, autism. But actually, we all know if you take 20 tablets of paracetamol, there's every chance you might die. But if you take two, it's going to be very helpful and stop you being uncomfortable. And it's all about understanding risk. And the peddlers of fear will just twist it completely to their own agenda. And we just have to try and be confident and reassuring, whilst at the same time, respecting our position as a scientist to understand that like nothing is completely harmless. Anything that we have in excess can be harmful. You could die from having too much coffee or chocolate or anything if you have too much of it.
Yeah, no, I think you've explained that really well, and it is difficult, isn't it? And I think people have, as you say, read and the phones are very good with the algorithms and also social influences as well. We have that problem as well, and people are coming in more and more anxious sometimes. It's a good thing to refer. I think, like, I do the sort of paracetamol equivalent to of when I'm talking about, medications or sunscreen as well, actually. But again, lately it's been in the news, so again, it's one of these things, but it can be tricky. But I think it's having, as a clinician, the sort of the evidence and the confidence to sort of explain the ins and outs of it and just reassure patients, because at the end of the day, you know, we all get sucked in by social media, you know, including ourselves. So it's a good discussion to have. It's funny that you referenced about the looking younger. I do always say that as well. You know, you will thank me in very many years when you've been using your sunscreen, you know, not to look as wrinkly as me, basically, and tend to go with the mums as well, make sure they're wearing the sunscreen, definitely. What's your take on vitamin D? Would you recommend that along with the sunscreen? Because that's another question we get asked quite a lot.
Yeah, well, my view on vitamin D is that it's definitely worth taking it when you're not using the sunscreen. You know, from October to March, definitely I would recommend it. But, you know, if you spend your majority of your life indoors in the summer and you're not out and about getting it, it probably makes sense to take it almost year round. I mean, I have to say I don't take it in the summer. My general sort of attitude to sun is, you know, I'm probably skin type 3, I would estimate. Yeah. I don't really burn. My mum was from Cyprus, so I will tan extremely easily, and I don't aim to get a tan, and my wife is always teasing me about the fact that I'm not tanned. But if I go in the garden for 20 minutes, half an hour, doing bits and pieces in the summer, I probably won't bother putting sun cream on my arms. But if I'm out for longer, I will. So I probably do pick up a little bit here and there. And actually, if you are on holiday somewhere and it's hot and sunny, there have been studies that have shown, unless you are applying sunscreen like absolutely religiously and completely smothering yourself, if you're living life normally, you're going to get some vitamin D. So I am not overly worried about my levels in through the summer months, but in the winter, I do generally take a tablet. And obviously, you have to give nuanced advice to different people. But overall, it's pretty safe to take a tablet, isn't it? Yeah. It's not difficult. So, the benefits of vitamin D are difficult to prove that it's a significant benefit on the wider health aspect from vitamin D. There's little evidence to support that. But certainly from a bone health perspective, it makes sense, especially for ladies. You know, it would be very sensible to do that.
Perfect. Yeah, and it is quite fascinating how, you know, we've moved on, and I would say even in the last 5 years, you know, as a nurse, your consultations have definitely changed. You know, you're talking about supplements, you're talking about skin sunscreen, you know, you're talking about social media. And I think, you know, a few years ago, these conversations that we really weren't having, you know, but now it's really up there with your, you know, holistic care, really, for patients, really important, and the questions they want to ask, definitely. Talking about male and female, we do know, and also skin of color, actually, to a fact that, you know, some probably skin type like me from Scotland, you know, Peely Wally, the way we would say, you know, has to use sunscreen. The minute we go out, we would burn straight away. But for those that maybe feel that they don't burn, which you quite often get asked with, you know, skin of colour, I don't need it because I don't burn, I don't need sunscreen. There's also the male generation sometimes that maybe work outdoors, lorry drivers with their arms. My dad was very guilty about that, not wearing sunscreen. Is there any way we can overcome these challenges with certain categories of people that possibly don't want to use the SPF? Any advice on that?
Well, again, that's quite a broad question because there's different people. So your sort of your white male builder who says, oh, I burn a couple of times at the beginning of the year and then my skin hardens, I don't burn, then throughout, I'm fine, I don't need to wear sunscreen. Well, that's where you need to have two aspects to it. One is every burning episode increases your risk of developing melanoma. And the second is the whole concept of accumulative burden and the risk of cancer. That is I wouldn't say it's an easier conversation, but at the same time, you can be pretty confident that an intervention with someone like that is probably going to be worthwhile because they genuinely are at risk of cancer, not just looking old and wrinkly. With the skin of colour, that's a much more challenging discussion because it depends why they want to wear sunscreen. If you've got somebody who is from Nigeria, who's got very dark skin, and they are saying, I don't need to wear sunscreen, I don't burn, and what's the likelihood of me getting skin cancer? Well, they probably don't need to wear sunscreen. You know, okay, if they were going to lie on a beach in the tropics all day, then of course there is a chance they'll burn. But to tell someone like that that they need to wear sunscreen every day is a much more difficult argument than telling you that you need to wear sunscreen on your face every day. So you need to explore why they might want to wear it. The reason why someone like that would want to wear it would be probably more to do with aesthetic reasons and not to be looking like mottled pigmentation, different sort of, you know, dyschromia and so forth as they get older. And if for them it isn't a problem, you know, it's like, do you know what, I don't care. I think you should save your arguments to someone else for whom it would be really very beneficial. However, there is a great deal of talk now within the dermatological world about skin of colour and the use of sun protection in skin of colour. And I mean, being cynical, I'm going to sound like the fearmongers on social media, but being cynical, that the increase in conversation seemed to have coincided with two big European companies having a filter that needs to be sold. But having said that, there is some evidence that people with skin of colour who are at risk of melasma would definitely benefit from wearing something which does have that blue light protection and the dark, you know, sort of the higher end UVA. But again, why are you using it? Again, again, it's more aesthetic. You can argue whether melasma is aesthetic or a medical condition, but equally it's appearance. They're not going to die from it. And it's not going to cause great morbidity as a consequence. It may cause psychological trauma. But again, I think you need to explore why they might want to wear it. And so we're sort of veering into that whole skin of colour and blue light protection, which is another topic which is quite topical. And I think people need to remember that the greater pigmentation comes from the UVB and UVA, not the blue light. Because I was speaking at the skin of colour training event earlier this year, at which probably 2/3, if not 3/4 of the audience were of skin of colour. And I actually sort of was challenging them because the general narrative is everyone with skin of colour needs to wear sunscreen all year round because, you know, especially with blue light. I was like, well, really, do you? You know, think about it. Does your skin get lighter or darker in the winter? They all go lighter. And you're spending your whole time indoors with light, you know. The blue light is coming from these strip lights all around us now. So the amount of impact from that is probably fairly minimal. And it's, I think you're perhaps getting sidetracked telling people to use more expensive products with the blue light protection, whereas actually just getting them to wear sunscreen of any form, as long as it's got good broad spectrum protection, is probably going to be the biggest, most important message. And telling telling a black person they need to wear sunscreen all year round because it's got the blue light protection doesn't make sense to say that someone like that needs to wear more sunscreen than you.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make sense. We've got to be believable as clinicians. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't just go out there and say, you must wear sunscreen on your face every day, all day, regardless of what's going on. And some people will do that because they are super anxious. They don't want to have a drop of UV hitting their skin. But for the average person, I think we lose credibility if we are not realistic with what we're saying to people. And I think we have to be believable and credible in our advice and make it. And that's the beauty of what you guys do. You generally have one-to-ones with patients. You can tailor that advice for that person to make it practical and realistic, but also believable as well.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's being sensible, isn't it? And like you say, it's not one sort of comment fits all. You know, we have to look at the person in front of us and have that conversation. And to be honest, if we started saying to put SPF on every day for every single person, they'd walk out the door and just ignore what I was saying.
Exactly.
And I think as well, you've got to think of cost. You've got to think of, you know, all the, you know, I mean, to put moisturiser on, sometimes it can be tricky. So you've got to think of all these things and just be sensible and have that sensible conversation with this patient. And I love the fact that, you know, you say we have to be credible and we have to be honest and open. And I think that's totally true. I have many different conversations with many different people and you kind of tailor it to the need of that person in front of you. So I think that's a really sensible approach. And thank you for saying that. So we've gone through what we've been talking about today is obviously you founding Altruis, which is some journey that you've been on. And we've talked about some of the challenges that we're facing as clinicians. We're talking about being sensible. So it's been absolutely fascinating to listen, and I could speak to you all day, but we will have to round up this podcast. But could you maybe mention about the future, what is going to be happening with Altruis? Have you got other products that are going to be available, or any thoughts about what is happening at the moment, other, you know, entrepreneur future happenings for yourself?
Well, I mean, it's been a gradual evolution as we've sort of moved along, and we're not sort of a massive corporate with a huge strategy. And I guess my main aim is still to be able to produce affordable, high quality sunscreen at the lowest possible price and remove the barriers for why people don't use it. So I think our core products will still remain the core of what we do. But there has been demand for other types of products. So we do have like a green cream which is great for people with pigmentary changes and a bit of redness. We've now produced a primer. Our latest one that we launched this year was a one for more oily skin types, so it's got a dry touch, and that's had really good feedback. So we've sort of doing lots of different things within that range, and also exploring the different types of packaging, so sprays. And one thing we might do next year, we're sort of looking into it, maybe a roll-on, because kids like roll-ons. And so that may be something we consider. But then if we're also going into trying to do some affordable dermatological care as well. So some of your listeners might not be aware that we have some moisturizing products. We've got the Dry Skin Repair Cream, which is a 10% urea. And the feet, I've had great results with that, with people who've got sort of that just slightly dry skin or that sort of slightly scaly. Even people who've got early sort of discoid asteatotic eczema on their legs, they can use that and it just resolves the problem. So products like that, hand cream. We've done a foaming face wash with salicylic acid for more acne prone skins. And we are trying to sort of broaden the offering whilst at the same time not losing focus of what our core aim is. And I guess the one thing we haven't mentioned is the fact that 10 pence from every tube sold is given to people with albinism. And we've actually donated over £1 million worth of product now. Wow. To people with albinism in Africa. And that has to remain the sort of the key focus, is the reduction of skin cancer. And all the other bits are nice to haves. And you know, the skincare enthusiasts keep saying, well, we need to do this, you need to do this. But I almost see it that all the other products that we make are there to generate an income such that we can then afford to produce the other products at the lowest possible price. And also make a sustainable business, because it's such a seasonal thing that ideally having products that people use year round can actually mean the cash flow is better as well. So there's other reasons for doing it. But I'd like to continue to break the barriers to the use of, you know, dermatological products.
Well, I mean, you're very humble and very, you know, just hearing you're so inspiring, but really want to keep it real, you know, and keep it, you know, you're helping, you know, the donations are phenomenal, what you've achieved. And, you know, I know speaking to yourself when you approach you on a conference, or your colleagues that are on the conference stalls as well, they're all so knowledgeable, and they, you know, keep it really real for clinicians to be able to describe, you know, what you've said in a consultation, because it just makes such a difference. Like you say, you know, keep it keep it simple, but keep it real as well. And then the patient in front of you really has that confidence in yourself and the reasons behind why you're applying certain creams or, like say acne prone skin or dry skin, it makes such a difference. So yeah, you really have done a phenomenal job. And, I remember right at the beginning when you were starting off and, you've just grown and grown and you still have that keeping it real sort of attitude, which is fantastic. Absolutely. So I'd like to thank you very, very much indeed. Our listeners today will really appreciate going through that incredible journey, and also for our clinicians that are listening today as well, just to have some more facts and figures behind the products that you have developed and be able to say to our patients as well. Are there any sort of key facts, anything that you would like to say before we close this podcast today?
Oh, well, I guess it'd be quite nice to say thank you to all your listeners. I've imagined that there's quite a lot of dermatological nurses that are listening. So thank you so much for your support. We genuinely couldn't do it without you. And keep up the good work.
Oh, that's really nice to say. And I know many of my colleagues really, back your products as well. And we love the packaging. We do. And another fact as well, like you mentioned about having bigger sort of, the, is it the liter ones or, that's just the way we should be going. Forward thinking, definitely, definitely. And it'd be great to see these products around, swimming pools and things like that, because I think that's what we should be doing. When you go abroad, that's what happens. In the UK, doesn't happen really as much. So yeah, all positive, all positive. So thank you again, and thank you to our listeners today for listening to this podcast. If there is any more information that you would like, please get in touch with the BDNG, the education team, and we can reach out to Dr. Burney as well if there's any advice you would like, or any of the, you still provide samples, don't you, as well, if from local teams for hospitals, is that correct, Dr.
Well,
Burney?
yeah, if a team at the hospital are sort of doing a promotional event or something, then we'll certainly send out brochures and notepads. And if there's a specific thing, we can sometimes send out some actual product to people as well. Yes, yeah.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Thank you very much for that. And it's also great for to have that local representation at your in your hospital, because you've got the products and the facts and figures behind your consultations as well, which is great. So thanks again. Thank you to our listeners for listening today, and I'm sure we will be talking more Altruist in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website bdng.org.uk and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.